now, get ready for uncensored sports madness. It's Dave in the City on Lux of the Week Radio.
Coast to coast, internet sports talk, Lux of the Week.
Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Let him play!
And it comes time, we know how Lincoln dies, you know, a tough spot with a bullet.
And as I speak to you, they're showing a Mongo USA fan at the World Baseball Classic, chanting USA.
Actually, this Paul Dave is a lot.
Ooh.
First thing you've got to mention here is the additions of Syracuse and Pitts, which is like adding two turds to a lawn.
No one puts the WGCs in the Players' Championship anywhere on the same level as a major fight. So chill out with that.
I actually never knew what meme was, and I always thought it was just MA. And
I wonder what it is like living out there on Saturn.
She was gorgeous, man. This girl was really good looking. And I'm like, holy, is that so-and-so? And I'm seeing him doing a body shot off her, and he's hammered. He turns around, he's like, I love this place.
You know, round apple with the Orioles lettering on it.
They should put the Orioles one in the river.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Lux of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the Big Monday Show, your special Masters recap podcast here in the city on Lux of the Week Radio. We come to you from Santa Monica tonight as we begin our fourth year of golf spots with our two friends tonight. Mike in North Jersey and John in Connecticut. 4 years doing these golf shows. It's hard to imagine that the time has flown. That actually was Mike who pointed that out earlier tonight, and we really sank in that this we've really been doing this for quite a while, and it's been a great time out every single one of them, and you really don't get better golf analysis than from these two. So this will be a fun night tonight, in spite of what was not a fun final round when all was said and done. It was great for the first seven holes. But the final 11 holes were not so great. In fact, it was essentially a victory lap for the winner of the Masters this year, Bubba Watson, who finished -8 and had a -3 fourth round. He was being matched for most of that by the phenom from Dallas, Texas, Jordan Spieth. And even at the point where he had holed the sixth hole from the sand, it really looked like he had a real shot at that. He had a window at that golf tournament, and unfortunately that window was only 20 minutes because right after that, he would give up four strokes in two holes, and Watson would make up two strokes in two holes. And so it was what they call two and two. I think that's what the description means. Spieth would end up going from two up to two behind. And Bubba, from that point on, never never looked back. And I tell you, Bubba Watson is a golfer as wild as they come. I personally not a fan of his. I don't like him. Every time when you see him hit great shots, it's obviously dazzling. But it never seems to me like he ever plans any of his great shots. He is so loose with the way he swings the club. He's a masterful driver in terms of distance, no question about it. But every other time you see him driving, it's a coin flip whether it makes it on the green or whether it winds up in the woods somewhere. And the Masters works great for him because the course is so wide. Every hole has a lot of a fairway and some very nicely trimmed second cut to work with. And even when he hits it in the trees on a weekend like this, he would get the bounce, and the ball would end up somewhere very hittable. So it was definitely a rare day for Bubba Watson, and even Amen Corner could not undo him. He actually got some birdies within those 11th, 12th, and 13th holes. I don't like it. I think he's a bit of a two-face. I think he lays it on really thick with the emotion. He's a little ridiculous, pretty classless guy, and just a buffoon. I am not a fan of Bubba Watson, but he can play golf, and he does a good job, and he finished -8. Five birdies on in the second round on Friday in a row. Five birdies in a row. That's what really got him into some very gettable territory. Didn't do so well on Saturday with +2, but he finished very well. As for the runner-up, Jordan Spieth in a tie with Jonas Blixt, Actually, both guys in their first Masters appearance for their career, their first ever Masters, and they both finished at minus five. And the path to get there was pretty much the same. I mean, they each of them were under par in their first three rounds and just didn't have enough to keep up with Bubba Watson in the end. Spieth lost it in hole 7 and 8, and then he lost it again in Amen Corner when he had that shot. I think it was on 12. I forget which one has the water. It was either 12 or 13. And he just misjudged the green. The ball hit the water. He recovered from that amazingly. He saved bogey on that, but he never made the big putts when he needed to on the back nine, and so he never really, nobody really threatened Bubba Watson for the final nine holes. So here's your winner, and now to tell you more about it, let's bring in our guests for the fourth time in our podcast history, Mike in North Jersey and John in Connecticut. First, let's introduce John. John, this was, I can't imagine, and I can't imagine that it was a drama we'd hoped for to finish out the not Masters. We know most of the time people will say the real Masters truly begins in the back nine, and there wasn't the drama there. But nonetheless, it should be fun to break down. John, welcome to the show. How's it going tonight?
Thanks for having me, Dave. Always fun to talk a little golf. I'm in agreement with Mike. Can't believe this is our fourth year now breaking down all the majors. So time certainly does fly. But happy to be here.
Yeah, it's definitely been a great 4 years, and I really appreciate you both being loyal to the program, coming on here all this time. Mike, you certainly are no stranger to this particular spot. Welcome to the show, and happy fourth anniversary. How's it going?
I'm in mourning over the Devils giving me a slimmer of hope before they, you know, shut the door on their playoff chances this year. I mean, 0-13 in the shootout, but I guess we can bring that up on Wednesday.
Yep, we got a show.
You can't even make it up.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's crazy that they were still this close. So, and that's a tribute to their, I don't know what it's a tribute to, but how do you do 0-3? Well, we'll talk about that on Wednesday. But yeah, this was this is certainly a different Masters this year. And good to have you with us, Mike. And you know, it was a very interesting year, and definitely this dawn of a new era in golf. It is the first time in Masters history in quite a while we have not seen the Eisenhower tree on 17. I mean, that just changes the face of the whole tournament, we think, but actually it didn't really. But it was the real reason that it was different is because we didn't see Tiger or Phil on this final round in the back nine. And so it was a very different dynamic to this particular Masters. And unfortunately, we had some competition for the front end of it, but it wasn't really the same kind of drama we were used to. So Mike, your comment on the field this year, in terms, before we get to Bubba, we'll talk about Bubba, we have a lot of stuff about Bubba, but you know, no Tiger, no Phil in the final round. Phil was in the tournament, but he did not do well. A lot of guys missed the cut. A lot of big names missed the cut. I mean, I think Keegan Bradley didn't even make the cut. Rory was close to not making the cut. So, yeah, not your typical Masters final round field. Your thoughts about the field this year?
Yeah, it certainly ended up being just only two guys, really, that had a chance to win on the final day. But I wouldn't go and say it's really the field or the absence of two particular star players. I mean, that might matter for, television ratings and stuff like that. But if you look at it, like if Tiger Woods had, let's just hypothetically say, had been able to play but was still playing at the level he was earlier this year, he wasn't going to be a factor on the weekend at this tournament. And Phil played in this tournament and missed the cut. And I guess now his short game has gone from being the best in the world to, you know, looking like some guy you'd see on the public course on the weekend. I don't know what he was doing. But, yeah, it was an odd tournament with, I think, the firmness and speed of the greens really threw a lot of people off. And, I don't know, it was a lot tougher to score this year in the Masters. Like, on Sunday, there were no eagles on the 15th hole. It's, like, unheard of. But, yeah, we did end up with a, I would say, slightly unexpected leaderboard. Bubba Watson, he really wasn't that much of a long shot. But you had Matt Kuchar in the mix, but he fell apart. And you know, Adam Scott was there early, but he fell apart on Saturday. So really, you're kind of the big-name guys you were looking at all I mean, some people had speed, but really it was down to very few people who were realistically in it. And, you know, basically the second that the final group got going on Sunday, it was a two-man race a few holes in, and then it was pretty much decided, you know, before the back nine even. So, yes, it was very odd, especially when you consider how the last few Masters have gone. We've had two playoffs, and then with the Charles Schwartzel birdieing the last four holes to win. So, really, we had three incredible finishes down to the wire in a row. And I don't know, maybe this is just a little bit back to reality of how golf tournaments can go sometimes.
Yeah, it's true. They can't all be winners in terms of the golf tournament. And to your point about Spieth, I would say that I was one of those who gave Spieth the fighting chance in this one. I had a lot of confidence in him, despite the fact that this was his first tournament, or his first Masters tournament. And I really think he did made a good name for himself. Again, three of the four rounds he hit under par in his final round, he was still even par for the day. So I thought that he did a really good job, considering it's his first attempt. I mean, this kid really, really soaks it all in with the Masters. He really enjoys it. So it was a great storyline. It was just a shame that we couldn't really make that, you know, culminate in a victory with a green jacket. And then, you know, Mike had a great point about the weather, too, which I'll get to in a second. But first to John, your thoughts about the field this year. Again, I mean, it does seem, you know, not a lot of name brand value. We do, except for Watson, obviously. But other than that, I mean, there's some relatively new names, a few pretty good names. I mean, Kuchar and Fowler were also in the mix for, you know, a brief period on Sunday. But your thoughts about the Masters tournament field and the tournament overall?
Yeah, I agree with what Mike said about Tiger. I mean, well, even if he had played, I mean, he was just playing some bad golf. Even when his back, you know, we didn't even know about his back other than the season. I mean, he just played horribly at Torrey Pines, or a course which, you know, he usually dominates, and you kind of just get the feeling that he just wasn't right. And even if he had played, it would have been the same effect as if he wasn't there. I mean, he wasn't going to do anything. It was just a really strange tournament. I mentioned on the message board the other day that usually you at least have one or two players on a Sunday that would shoot a really nice score from the last couple groups and put some pressure on the leaders. But literally, if you look at the scores of the last, you know, three or four pairings, Bubba was the only guy who really shot a nice round of 3-under, and that was certainly good enough to win because no one did anything. The only player who shot anything on the back nine was actually Miguel Jimenez, who was 3-under on the back nine, but unfortunately he was 2-over on the front nine, or else we could have had some juice there at the end. But really, no one made much of a run. Spieth had some chances to make some putts, but he couldn't make birdie at 11, at 13, at 15. If he had made those three putts, you know, they were certainly makeable within 10 feet. He could have certainly put some pressure there on Bubba. But overall, I mean, you could kind of see after that swing on holes 8 and 9, his swing, you know, was kind of starting to break down. He was blocking some shots to the right, and we've seen that out of him. You know, he was in contention earlier this year at Torrey Pines. You know, he kind of let his emotions get the best of him. And, you know, he's a young kid. He's 20 years old. He'll learn from this experience. But overall, just a really a dull back nine. But I've got to give credit to Bubba for, you know, for hitting the shots and making pars. I mean, he easily could have made a couple bogeys. I mean, his short game wasn't terrific all weekend. He just, the course just really fits his eye. And, you know, what's this now, six left-handers in the last 8 years to win the tournament, which is interesting because, you know, you would think then why isn't, you know, any right-hander that hits a draw would be, you know, so great at that course, just like a left-hander that hits a fade. But alas, that's what we're left with. So strange tournament, but in the end, you know, Bubba deserved to win.
Yeah, he deserved to win. I mean, there wasn't really any debate on this one this year. And a very funny comment regarding the success of left-handers. Funny in the unusual sense. It was definitely that. Yeah, I mean, this course is a big one for him. I mean, I know it was the Masters was also a big course for Tiger in his day, and his lack of participation certainly probably wouldn't, in terms of competition, isn't a huge impact. But I would say that the gallery, I would get banned from Masters for saying this. The patrons,
No chance you're ever getting in.
Oh, man. I mean, bigger new luminaries than I have been banished for less than that. That's anyway, the people there, I think people is allowed at Augusta, there were less of them. I mean, it was just, you could sense that there wasn't really quite the same kind of buzz about the tournament, whether it really amounted to anything on the course or not. And so I thought that was an interesting point to cite. Although I would say that Bubba Watson's army, so to speak, his fan base, is pretty big. And they definitely got a lot of support there on the course. And so who knows? I mean, Bubba's a guy that just... he's kind of like Happy Gilmore, but without the charm and personality. It's kind of, he's just, if Happy Gilmore was just a straight up a-hole, it would be Bubba Watson. That's kind of my interpretation of the whole thing. Anyway, Mike, let's converse quickly. Just one more Tiger question, and this is, it got relayed to me from Tommy. And it has to do with the back injury. Basically, he asks, with respect to Tiger Woods, let's see, what does it say? Okay, Ask Panther, do you think Tiger is really hurt now after you claimed he was faking a back injury like a dodo?
After I claimed he was faking a back injury? Well, you know, I guess this time he wasn't faking it. Although it was ironic, though, that his back would be bothering him. You know, if his back was bothering him, he only lets you know it when he's playing a bad round. So... perhaps he wasn't faking the injury. Maybe he was just faking the effects when he was playing badly. But, good for Tommy.
Well, I think it needed to be done, whatever this procedure was. I mean, obviously, he did not look like himself in the last year. So, I mean, he's getting old. I mean, when you get old, time doesn't really give you any backsies. I mean, there's really no going back. And so when you see a guy like, for example, Olazabal do okay, make it to the final round, make the cut, I mean, that's pretty impressive. Or another fellow Spaniard by the name of Miguel Angel Jimenez make a run. I still can't pronounce his, I don't know which is the correct pronunciation. I'm going by the official Spaniard pronunciation. But, you know, he finished, like you said, he finished minus four. And so an old guy like him can manage fine. So age is not an end-all be-all, but generally speaking, you're not going to play as well when you're older than you did when you were younger. I mean, when you're a lot older versus a lot younger. So that's time will tell, in an ironic twist, with whether Tiger's return from injury is going to amount to a big difference in his gameplay. We'll see. All right, so let's move on. Other topics here on the Masters tournament. Well, I mean, this is very different this year because we, like, really don't have a lot of material to cover. But, you know, John, let's go back to the point about the weather. It was a very, very warm weekend, especially for this time of year at Augusta. And the dry conditions definitely made the greens way faster than you would expect. And people were really struggling. Mike mentioned it earlier in the broadcast. The lack of eagles on the 15th green is a very surprising indeed. So weather conditions at this golf tournament, is it how unusual was it to see these kind of dry and very quick and swift surfaces this year?
Yeah, I mean, Augusta always likes to have their greens fast. That's what they're known for. But they almost got kind of like a U.S. Open conditions. I mean, if you look at the leaderboard, I think, what, six or seven guys finished under par. And I know they like the course to play at a reasonable difficulty, but it was just really hard to get the ball close to the pins and make putts. And if you missed the green, it was really hard to control your chip shots and get up and down. So the weather definitely had an effect. And what was funny is they actually had a huge rainstorm earlier in the week that kind of was almost a washout on either Monday or Tuesday. And then by the end of the week, it's playing like the U.S. Open. So that definitely, I think, had an effect on the scoring. And they might have gotten that rain a little bit, in the competition round, like Thursday or Friday. I think you could have seen on the, kind of those rules of Augusta, as Mike likes to say, on the back nine. Usually the score at the Masters, the winning score is like, 12, 13 under. I mean, Bubba was 8 under, and, that's probably about as good as he could have shot, or anyone really, for the winning score.
Yeah, it was, no question about it. I mean, it was just, I mean, it's nice because you didn't have to worry about rainouts. It was so that from that standpoint, it was neat. There were no rain delays or anything like that. But you definitely would have been. It would have been nice to see, you know, lower scoring, which would have probably fielded a much tighter competition. So, you know, it's over now, so nothing you can really say about it. So now to get to Mike, what did Bubba do to take advantage of these different conditions?
Well, when you're driving the ball 360 yards on a par 5 and then come in with a sand wedge and the greens are firm and fast, it's really not going to matter much because you're just coming in with such a lofted club that it's going to land loft softly and it's going to stop. And that's basically what he did. He's just, you know, I was looking at some of Bubba's driving stats this year. They have all kinds of new ones now that they track all of your drives. So if you're like using Freewood all the time and stuff, it kind of comes up. Bubba is basically like John Daly was in the mid 90s compared to the rest of golf. Like something like 70% of his drives this year, all drives, not just measured ones, are going over 300 yards. And the next closest guy is at like 50%. And then like Rory McIlroy, for example, is at 17%. So think about that. He is just so much, he has such an advantage off the tee compared to everyone. And he hits like his 8-iron 200 yards. So he just comes in with this ridiculously high ball flight or low ball flight if he wants. I mean, the guy is just, he has so much talent. It's unreal almost. And if he gets his, I don't know if he ever will because he is certainly an odd character. But if he can, like, focus somewhat on trying to be the best golfer he can be, he can win five more majors before he's done.
He's
good right now, and he's hitting shots that no one else in golf has a prayer of hitting. Like, even when he won the Masters the first time, no one else in golf could have hit that shot out of the woods. It's just ridiculous how talented he is.
You know, I still
can't. Even though he is a dick.
Oh, he's a total dickbag, no question. But I still can't believe that shot you mentioned about him hitting it out of the woods. It's just like, who does this? I mean, I remember that. And like I said, oh, he has no chance. And he got it out of there. And I don't know if it landed on the green. Maybe it did. Did it land on the green, that shot?
Yes.
Oh, my God. That's outrageous. That's right. It's right. It did land on the green. I mean, that is just like Superman golf right there. But as I was saying at the beginning of the podcast, I mean, he does not, it just never seems like he plans any of this stuff out. The word focus is actually quite apropos here because you just don't know what you're going to get with that guy. I mean, 1 second, he'll throw it way into the woods. Sometimes he gets a little luck on his side. Like, it'll go way right, but then it bounces off a tree and ends up in a hittable situation. So, it's crazy. The Masters definitely caters to his style of play. John, your thoughts about Bubba Watson and the mastery or just the bedazzlement of his shots?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see. I mean, if you really want to see how much of like a slice he puts on his tee shot, you have to watch him play in person. I mean, on every single tee shot, he's starting the ball like 30 or 40 yards right at the fairway. He's just curving it. It's just really unbelievable. And the thing is, he's never taken a golf lesson in his life. So just imagine, like, if, you know, he could actually get with a teacher who could teach him some fundamentals. And I say that because, you know, he's not going to keep, he just can't keep this, you know, swashbuckling style, if you will, for his whole career. I just don't think it's going to work. I mean, it's done well for him so far, but if he really wants to be a truly elite golfer, I think he needs to, you know, kind of cut some of that out. But time, that's kind of what makes him attractive and fun to viewers, so it's kind of a catch 22, but it's just really unbelievable the way he kind of hits these shots like around trees and off the tee, and he's just so long. I mean, that tee shot he hit on 13, just unbelievable. He had 100 yards left into that green. I mean, Jordan Spieth hit it in the trees and laid up, and he was 10 yards ahead of Bubba's tee shot. I mean, it's just it's unbelievable the way he plays, and you know, got to give the guy credit. He's, like I said, he hasn't had a lesson in his life, and here he is. You know, 2 Masters wins. I think at some point he's really got to take his focus level up if he truly wants to win, you know, those 5 or 6 more majors, like Mike said.
That's really fascinating that he has that kind of talent. It really shows on the course. I mean, That's him raw. Him refined, him with coaching would just be a totally different story. The thing is, I don't know if that's something he really wants to do. I mean, you can sense from his, yeah. You know, is that his MO?
I don't think he'll ever get a coach. I just think that's his style. But I think if he really wanted to harness, like, all the ability he has, it would definitely suit him to at least consider the idea, you know?
Yep. You know, and adding to the comment about Bubba Watson's personality, I was curious as to whether you thought, Mike, that Bubba Watson's post-Masters dinner at Waffle House, of all places, was him playing up his personality or something that he actually would do? And I can't decide on this one. What do you think?
Dave, he's just so weird. Like, all right, I see the picture. I'm like, okay, Southern redneck thing. And then it, like, mentions in the caption, he's with his best friend, Pastor something-something of, like, City Church in Seattle. So his best friend is a pastor of, like, some, I don't want to get religious here, but let's just, they believe a lot of literal interpretations of stuff.
Right.
And just like this, that's your best friend. I really don't understand. He is a weird, weird character.
Yeah.
And gets very worked up on the golf course. I say, I'm not sure what he's actually like off the course, really, with friends. I mean, he wouldn't do anything that would interest me. Like, I don't think he even drinks a beer, so he's definitely not someone you'd want to have a beer with. But yeah, like, if you see him in person, you can tell he's like, he just looks almost like very agitated, and he's almost like he's looking around for someone to like move suddenly so he can get like pissed off. I don't know. It's very odd, really, how he acts on the course, at least.
Yeah, his paranoia is pretty evident if you ever see him in person, and I did have the chance to see him in person. He is just nuts. I don't know what else to say. He's just, remember that moment where he was ripping the guy for taking a picture? He didn't even take a picture. We didn't hear anything. He will blame anything and everything possible and just take his frustrations out at whatever. He was blaming the wind on the back nine somewhere. I forget what hole it was. It may have been 14. The pin wasn't even moving. The flag wasn't moving. He's like, oh, that wind must have been terrible. He's like, you got to be kidding. I mean, this guy is just full of excuses. It really boggles the mind. John, any further comment about Bubba's personality?
No, he's just really an odd duck, I guess that's all you can say. I mean, earlier this year it was the Phoenix Open, and he misses a putt on the 18th hole that would have tended to a playoff with Kevin Sadler, and he just looks at his caddy and he's just complete disgust. It's like, dude, you hit the putt, for crying out loud. I mean, come on. And you give your caddy credit for the 300-yard drive you hit, Ben. I mean, come on, man. You know, just it's just really tough to take when he does that, yelling at his caddy, yelling at the fans. I remember last year he played a tournament in Europe, and it's just completely different over there. You know, people had cameras out. You know, there was no real defined, areas for the pros to walk, and just threw him off so much. He said he was never going back to Europe again to play except for the the Open Championship. I mean, just some of the things he does just really makes you, dislike him off the course and just his attitude. But, you can't deny his talent, that's for sure.
No, you can't deny his talent. And at this point, you can't deny his popularity either, and that's the next question. I mean, what makes him so popular? Is it just the swashbuckling attitude, the Brett Favre of golf, if that makes any sense? I mean, that whole gunslinger mentality. Mike, I mean, why is the media and why are fans such a big fan of Bubba Watson?
Because he's not the conventional, stiff type of personality you'd see on the PGA Tour. The fact that he's never had a lesson, that he has a very unique swing, that he hits the ball so long, I mean, though that in general, that will draw people. Now, people that really kind of tune in and, see that he's always yelling at the caddy and stuff like that, that's obviously not good for his public image. But just when you hear about him, oh, he's the longest hitter on tour, he's never had a lesson, and then you see him hit a ball, it is appealing. There is part of him that is appealing, just purely as a golfer. I mean, I wish Bubba Watson didn't act the way he did on the course. Otherwise, he would just be this it would be great to be I'd be a huge fan of someone like that who would, never had a lesson, the longest hitter on tour, but the guy's just he doesn't seem very likable, except for how he plays golf. It kind of reminds me of another certain golfer that Tommy brought up, but...
That's a good Tommy brought up. You know, it's a different, like I said, it's a different year. We don't have any Tiger antics to break down this year. So, very different tournament. And we'll be see if we could do that next year too. I'm not sure, but it, you know, could be a interesting situation, Mike. Anyway, moving on. I mean, we have, we do see that Watson's definitely made it into the big time again. Second jacket in 3 years. The first one, as we alluded to, came in a playoff. Pretty exciting finish to that Masters. And so none of that in this particular round. But there still were some pretty good performances for the entirety of the tournament. And one of them, as we mentioned earlier, Jonas Blixt, who had the lead in the beginning of the tournament in round number one. He is one of... a select number of Swedes who have made a pretty good run in tournaments, but have never won. Sweden has yet to claim any major championship, for as far as I know. Henrik Stenson would probably be the most likely to do so. How much closer are we now to seeing the country of Sweden take a major in the PGA Tour or the Masters? John, your thoughts?
I mean, yeah, we're close as we've ever been. I'll be honest. I really liked what I saw from Blix over the weekend. He wasn't really rattled. I mean, he made clutch par putt after par putt when it looked like he had no chance. He won a tournament last season in the summer. I think he won before that too. And I believe he finished in the top five at the PGA too at Oak Hill. So he's really an up and coming player. I like what I've seen from him. And obviously Stenson was one of the best players in the world, towards maybe the best player in the world by the end of last season. So Swedish golf. I mean, those two are. Be carrying the flag for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and it's exciting because I think for the country of Sweden, I'm sure they have a lot to look forward to going into the rest of the year. There's certainly more of the same coming up at the U.S. Open, more of the same coming up yet again at the Open Championship, and then the PGA. There are going to be some numerous opportunities for either of those two, especially with Blix being so young. I mean, this is his first Masters. So it seems to me that we haven't seen the last of Blix. Let's get to Panther, a.k.a. Mike in North Jersey.
Can I make a point about Blix real quick? I kind of have a little bit of a different view about him. I'm not really sold on him at all, really. I don't think he's done any – yes, he had a second-place finish here. It was a good performance, but in reality, he was no threat to win at any time. Same thing can be said for his PGA Championship performance, where I think he was a tied fourth. But if you look besides that, this guy really hasn't done anything, and he's not that young. He's in his late 20s, or he might be closing in on 50. Like, for instance, he missed the Shell Houston, missed the cut at the Valspar Championship. He's played 9 events this year. He has that 1 second place finish. He has no other top tens, and he has 4 missed cuts after missing 9 cuts last year. So I don't know. I'd say the jury's still out on him. Yes, it's an impressive. He's put up a couple impressive showings in majors, but you know, it's not really. He hasn't really been a serious threat to winning them, and then he just seems so bad in the other events he's played in that I don't know. Well, time will tell, but I'm not really. I don't know. I don't. Really see him right now, or at least for what he's shown, that he's going to amount to all that much.
Very interesting counterpoint, Mike. And as far as Blix, too, that's true. He is a late bloomer. And I'll get to another late bloomer in a minute. But let's first go to John with any particular rebuttals to that. Anything else you wanted to add regarding Jonas Blix?
Well, I mean, it's very fair. He's only got a couple tour wins, and this was his first Masters. And Mike's right; he really didn't. Come close to, you know, challenging for the lead at all. I mean, it's a very, very fair argument. I just like the way he was making some of those clutch par saves. I think it'll serve him well, you know, when the time comes when he's going to be fighting for the lead. But we'll see. It's a very fair counter argument.
All right. Very well said. So now moving on down the line as far as the rest of the field, there are a couple other guys I wanted to bring up. I mean, before we get into the disasters of the tournament, oh, my goodness. I mean, wait till you hear what I have to say about McIlroy. But quickly, Ricky Fowler. Now, we mentioned that Blix was someone who, you know, we thought maybe he might have been younger because we saw him for the first time, but he's actually a little older. I have the opposite effect with Fowler. I thought he was older than he was. He's only 25. So considering that, he's still got some maturing to do, but he seems to be working towards that. And the fact is, he had a fifth-place finish, although with a tie for fifth this time around. So Fowler is at a bit of a fork in the road with his career. It does seem like he's got his head on straight. He's got a good attitude. The question is he going to have the focus to really go out and get a major? So let's turn to Mike first about Ricky Fowler. Do you feel like he's making some improvement towards that end? Because we call him the creamsicle. That was your term. But what do you see Ricky Fowler's potential for the next 5 years?
Well, he's working with Butch Harmon now after he had previously not used the swing coach. He struggled for a little bit. Now he's starting to show signs of improvement, so you really have to give this entire year. And I'll be interested to see, because the guy obviously had a lot of talent coming up, or let's say maybe natural talent. But in terms of his results, he made the Ryder Cup team as a rookie, and, you know, because of the flashy dressing and stuff, he's become like much more popular than his golf game alone should have gotten him. You saw those kids in the drive, chip and putting in Augusta, like half of them, their favorite player is Ricky Fowler, which I'm just like, I don't understand that. But no, he's going to Busch Harmon, he's definitely, you know, he's not wearing the all orange thing anymore and cut the hair. Yeah, he did mention he wants to be known for his golf. So, all right, let's give him a – let's see how this works out with Harmon, and I'll take his word that he wants to be known for his golf. I'm not sure. I'm sure there is some talent there, but I don't know. He really hasn't done much overall with his career, but he's definitely taking the right steps to improve as a player.
I'm really glad you reminded me about that drive, chip, and putt contest. I really want to get into that in a few minutes. But first, let's go to John about his thoughts on Ricky Fowler. Is he making good on his promise to become a better golfer, to be known more for golf than for his fashion?
Yeah, I mean, I think Mike said it best, and he's kind of the opposite of Bubba, where, you know, Bubba's a huge douche on the course and can be a prick at times, but he's an amazing player. Whereas Ricky is, by all accounts, he's a real nice guy. Kids love him, but, I mean, really, what has he done? I mean, he has one tour win in, what, 5 years? I mean, compare him at 25 to Spieth or, you know, even Patrick Reed, who missed the cut. He's got 3 wins already, or McIlroy's the same age. He's got 2 majors and a ton of wins. I mean, just performance isn't there to match his hype, but at least he's taken the steps and going to see Butch Harmon, who should have some help, and the swing did look, you know, much better over the weekend. He really didn't do much on Sunday, but he's definitely getting to the position to contend for these majors. So hopefully, he'll keep working, because he's definitely a good kid, and I like to see him do well. But it hasn't lived up to his hype so far. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mike and I both agreed on that on our previous golf podcast. Or no, it wasn't even that. I think Mike, you were on with me for a different reason. I forget what, but we had you on earlier in the year, and we were talking about Ricky Fowler and his getup. And it's hard to take him seriously right now. If he starts getting some wins at somewhere along the line, it'll finally happen. But we'll close the book for now on him. Let's get to the rest of the field. Mike, we'll start with you first. Your thoughts about other players who disappointed you or impressed you on this Masters tournament weekend?
Phil Mickelson, obviously, even though he wasn't playing well, that's always a disappointment. Just the way he did it. On the 12th hole in the second round, he hits a shot into the back bunker, blasts it, or I forget which bunker he hit it into first, but he blasts from one bunker into the other and then blasts back into the other bunker again, and ends up making a 6 on the 12th hole without hitting it into the water. And this guy is one of the great short game players of all time. And then in the first round on the 7th hole, he like screwed up the chip shot and then tried to chip it back up, and it went way past the hole, and they like 3-putted I think it was another triple bogey. So it's just, it's very surprising to see that happen to him. Dustin Johnson, well, course, there were red flags after that Shell Houston Open where he basically opened up like a bogey golfer. Kind of got it back on track, but shot 80 and withdrew. And so, I don't know, I kind of figured, you know, maybe he just wasn't there mentally for the beginning of the round. And he just said, screw it. But no, he didn't do anything today or anything at all. Like, he shot 77, I think, in the first round of the Masters. And Jason Duffner, who, first of all, he looks like he's gained about 25 pounds and, like, hasn't since the PGA Championship, whatever. I think he's enjoying life. But he made a 9 on the 13th hole, and I actually saw him. He hit his third shot into the creek, and then from the dropping area, he completely, like, topped his second pitch, but he topped it so badly it didn't even get into the water. But he shot an 80 in the first round, and that was the end of him. And, Sergio Garcia has a withdrawal from the Arnold Palmer last year, and then you have to go back to the 2012 PGA Championship to find the last time he missed a cut, and he really looked like he was trending in the right direction. He had 2 worldwide wins in, like, his last 10 starts or something, but no, it wasn't there for him either. So I guess those guys would be pretty prominent disappointments.
Yeah, Sergio Garcia is a good point. Is a good one because I mean he was on a roll even going through the Texas two-step, one of those two tournaments. He was doing pretty well, and I thought that he might have had another run in him. Didn't happen. That was surprising to me too. So, John, your thoughts on the persons in the rest of the field who disappointed and impressed you over the weekend?
Yeah, I'll give you 2 for a disappointment, and there are 2 guys who were right there on the weekend. Were Adam Scott, who I was pretty surprised on Saturday, just had nothing at all, and you know, fell out of contention. It really looked like his game was there to contend for another Masters. Yeah, that's kind of disappointing, but I'm sure we'll see him in contention again on the other majors this summer. I'm not too concerned about him. But how about Matt Kuchar? I mean, this guy, every single week he's up there, but he just doesn't know to finish the job. I mean, for all of his smiles and Walmart of fire, as Andy said the other day, I mean, he just, I don't know what it is with this guy. And actually, you know, Mike made a great point today. I listened to him about 10 minutes on golf, and most of the time I was banging my head against the wall, but he did make one great point. Matt Kuchar is this generation's Davis Law, that he's just up there every single time, but he just can't get it done, and you're starting to see that trend. I mean, he's in perfect position heading into the final round. If he shoots 4 or 5 under, he's going to win the tournament, and he's certainly capable of it. His swing is just so weird. I mean, he aims like 30 yards right off the tee. He's kind of got the club hovering over the ground. It's just such an unnatural-looking swing, and it's failed him here in these kind of events, on these big events. So we'll see. The jury's definitely out on him. I wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, win the RBC tournament this week. That's what he does. I mean, he wins these sheer events, and then when it comes to the majors, he can't play on the weekend. But one guy, so those are my 2 disappointments. So a guy who really impressed me, I mean, come on, Miguel Jimenez, 50 years old. I mean, he probably has woke up on the first tee with 3 liters of wine in him and smoking cigars all over the place. And he looks like he's over himself at this point. And there he is. Like I said, he had the best back 9 of anyone on the top of the leaderboard, -3. And just a guy who's going to be playing on the Champions Tour this week. That's another thing. The Golf Channel is so desperate for people to watch the Champions Tour. They're hyping Miguel Jimenez playing on the Champions Tour. Come on.
That's true. You know, I have the PGA Tour app, John, and it actually shows you updates from all the tours. They have the web.com tour, the Champions Tour, and then this PGA Tour Latino, I think, is this other one that they have, and you get to see all kinds of sheer leaderboards. And it's actually
I would watch. I think I would watch the Hooters Tour before I'd watch the Champions Tour. No offense to any of you, but I think it's the most pointless golf I've ever seen.
That's a decent point all around. Oh, that's good. Yeah, but you know, I have to give an attaboy to Jimenez as well. He did a tremendous job. I mean, you know, there's some guys who are 50 some years old and they age so gracefully. And but this guy actually looks it, man. He's old, but he did a good job. It was pretty interesting to see him in the final pairing with Ricky Fowler, who is quite literally half his age or even less. That was quite a scene. So anyway, Mike, I don't know. Is there anything else you wanted to add with respect to all of the above?
Yeah, Matt Kuchar, he still managed to have like that smile on his face, but every other feature of his look on the last two holes, he looked like he was going to kill someone, but he still had that smile on his face, and I'm like, this is just disturbing. I think that's a guy about to go and, you know, shoot about five people for no reason. Did he, like, surgery or something to, like, hold his mouth in that position?
I don't know.
It was just bizarre. It's one other player that we definitely deserves credit for just an unbelievable job and an even more amazing round four. Bernhard Langer, who's 56 years old, two-time Masters champion, 86 and 91, I think. He shot a 69 in the final round at 56 years old and tied for eight with Rory McIlroy. That's just insane.
That's true. I mean, it was a multiple tie for eight, but it was that is insane. I mean, that is a real blast from the past. We were talking, what, 1985 when he won? Is that right? 1985?
He won twice. He won in 86 and, like, 90 or 91. It had to be 91. Nick's album won in 90.
Yeah, Felder
Yeah, he's not like, you know, some of these guys like, you know, Craig Sauer was out there shooting 90 the first two rounds. Langer can play. I mean, I know from my Western Golf channel, he's winning all these tournaments on the Champions Tour. That guy can still play. I mean, if he wanted to play the European Tour, I'm pretty sure he would finish in the top, you know, 50 on the money list. I mean, he's like a machine, that guy. He can play golf.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that certainly showed on this particular weekend in Augusta. So, like I said, it's interesting share of personalities on the course. A lot of guys didn't make it. Let's get to McIlroy briefly. McIlroy's a guy that, from the outsider's point of view, is a guy that a lot of people want to see succeed, and he has succeeded. I mean, like you mentioned, there's two majors under his belt already. But in the current, he's still so young. It's amazing that one would think that he has so much potential to go places. But lately, it's just been a struggle for him. I mean, not only is he not getting these majors in recent vintage, but he's struggling to make the cut most of the time. Certainly, that was a case this year at the Masters. He was basically a stroke away from missing the cut on, I think it was Friday. Just made it. And he managed to play out the rest of the round. So I don't know what to make of McIlroy at this point. There are two people who have better insight on golf than I do. So let's start with Mike first. McIlroy, I mean, what is it going to take for this guy to get it together?
Well, if you take a step back and look at it from maybe maybe put a little less expectations on him. He has improved significantly from where he was last year. And just pulling up his results really quickly, if you look since the Australian Open, first place, 11th, tied for second, tied for ninth, tied for 17th, tied second, 25th, 7th, 8th. So, that's not doing too bad. He has two second-place finishes and three top tens and seven events. I mean, that's not doing badly, but the thing is because he won those two majors by eight strokes each, everyone immediately was trying to anoint him the next Tiger Woods. The type of player he is, he's never going to be on that level or to the level of someone who's going to win like 10 majors or something like that. He just, the type of ball flight he has with the high draw, with the power he has, that's always going to be susceptible to getting offline, and there's just going to be times where he's going to get himself in too much trouble, and he's not going to be able to recover from it. And one of the things I am seeing, and maybe this will improve with time, maybe it won't, is that he's very much a momentum player, and once the momentum shifts one way or the other, it really doesn't turn around. Like when he's playing well, he can just absolutely steamroll the competition, which he did at the end of 2012. And it was just a joke going through the PGA and the FedEx Cup playoffs like that. But it just seems when something goes wrong and he needs to scramble or he has a couple bad holes, like he just, I don't know, almost checks out in a way. And, well, who knows, with age maybe that will change, but perhaps not. But he is playing much, like, he was a disaster this time last year. I mean, if you just look at it from, I don't know, if you look at him as almost any other player, he is having a very solid year so far.
Well, you've always mentioned that he'd always be in the mix in terms of the top 10 finishes, so that does seem to carry over, but it is interesting. You know, I think we may have simply just overvalued him at the beginning of his career. He was so hot to start that the bar of expectations is just so high for him, and maybe that's unrealistic at this point. So, John, Rory McIlroy, where do you see him right now, and what is his ceiling for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I think he's definitely in a better spot than he was last season. I mean, he was just completely lost last year, and you can see it. He's definitely turned that around where he's in contention now for these events. I mean, he really didn't play that badly this week. I mean, he had a couple bad breaks on Friday, which, as Mike says, when he gets that momentum in the other direction, he just really can't seem to recover. Did well enough on the weekend to get a top 10, so, you know, good for him. You know, I think he can be in contention here for the majors the rest of the season. It's just that he's got to bear down and, trust his swing and, and see where it takes him. He's definitely got all the ability to be in contention and win these majors. I wouldn't be surprised to see him win any of them, but I wouldn't be surprised either to see him, you know, kind of like this weekend, have a couple decent rounds, one poor round, and, you know, finish, you know, in the top 20 either. So, go either way with him.
Good. Yeah, it's good to. I'm glad to hear that he's gotten better. And I think you made a very interesting point as far as the bad breaks he was getting, because I think at least in the second round, he had some decent shots, but he wouldn't get the bounces. And I think that goes back to the weather again, where things were going badly for him. Like, you would get a putt, and you know, it was like an inch less, he would have been okay, and then it would just roll all the way down off the green and sometimes into the water. It was tough. It was kind of he got a little bit of bad luck on his side at that particular time. So we'll see if he can get something, you know, closer the next time around. But it's good to know that he's making a little bit of a comeback here. Good to know. All right. So we are speaking tonight to John in Connecticut and Mike in North Jersey. I am Dave Medina, and to finish up our hour tonight on the Masters, a few other ancillary topics we can bring up, and this is one that really intrigued me. Mike, the Masters instituted a variant of the NFL's punt, pass, and kick competition, and it's called the Drive, Chip, and Putt competition, which they do from Augusta National, and I think it's a terrific idea. But it's what's really funny to me is that the amount of promotion that this thing has been getting, even through Masters weekend, you just kept hearing these promos for this Drive, Chip, and Putt registration. Every commercial break they would go to, and they don't have many commercial breaks in the Masters, but almost every one they would bring up a little teaser about the Drive, Chip, and Putt website. So this is something they really are taking on head on. There are many motivations for it, I'm sure. But do you feel like this is a good move for golf? Is it peculiar to see suddenly a big gung-ho interest in the youth of America, especially from Augusta National?
No, I think it's a smart idea for them. You know, it would really, you know, as I actually played some, I guess they were semi-competitive tournaments as a kid, like with my father. They'd have like the state open father-son tournament, and you had to be like under 8 years old or something, and you'd play alternate shot. So I played with him in that for a few years. And it's like, yeah, I remember like being a kid, and if they had something like that, it would have been like something I'd dream about being able to get into. And, you know, for all the popularity Tiger Woods has brought in golf, he has not really increased participation in it. So, you know, giving something, some kind of program, you know, for younger kids to, like, you know, want to play golf. Hey, I can go play at Augusta, you know. I think it's a good idea, and it's, good job by Augusta National there.
I agree with that. I mean, I think Augusta really opened their door a little bit, and I think it's actually quite touching to see them really reaching out to the to kids out there, be it from all sorts of different places. I noticed a lot of them were from right here in Southern California. I mean, one was from Santa Monica, as a matter of fact. That's right by where I live, so it's very interesting. So it really shows you the breadth of where you can find great golf here in the country. So, John, your thoughts about the newly instituted drive, chip, and putt competition. Do you think this has some potential for the future?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's probably not the best idea to, you know, teach the game. I mean, I know when I was growing up, I used to play, you know, youth tournaments, and that's probably the best way to get competition, you know, competition ready if you're really serious about the game. But, you know, if anything like that, you know, generates interest and gets kids out there and playing golf, it's fine by me. And, you know, it's a good match, you know, CBS and Augusta National promoting this. So I think it's definitely good for the game. Anything on my dad and the First Tee program and, you know, your local junior tour, anything that gets more kids interested in the game of golf, I think it's a good thing. Because, like, unlike other sports like football or even basketball, I mean, once you're 60 years old and fat and have a beer belly, you can still be out there playing golf. And, you know, you can't say that about any of these other sports. And so I think that's kind of, I don't want to say it's the allure of the game that you can be fat and old and playing, but it's definitely a game that, you know, if you get attached to it as a kid, you'll just stick with it for the rest of your life.
You know, it's funny you bring up 50-year-old players. I forgot to mention Freddie Couples. Fred Couples with a little bit better finish than he usually does in these majors, actually. I mean, for Fred Couples, I thought he did a pretty good job. I mean, he hung in there for a while. I mean, he never was a threat to actually take the lead, but he stayed under par for a long time, and I think he may have even finished under par. No, he didn't finish under par, but he stayed under par for much longer than I expected this time around. I mean, people got behind Fred Couples too. I think it's just because I think a lot of people can relate to it. Oh, he's kind of my age and still doing pretty well and on a great level. So Fred Couples, did he have a little more staying power to you, Mr. Checker?
I mean, you know, it's just like, you know, death, taxes, and Fred Couples contending with two after the Masters. I mean, that's what he does these days. I mean, I think the last 5 years he's been in the top 10 or so heading into the weekend. I wouldn't even say his back gave out this weekend because the weather was so nice. I just think he didn't play as, you know, he was 3-under actually heading into the back nine. He just hit one in the water and that was the end of it. But, I mean, he clearly loves the course.
Yeah.
You know, it's just his favorite place in the world to play. I guess Faldo talked to him on the range, and he said that if he had won the tournament, he would have retired right there. That's just how you know, how much he loves the place. But, you know, great performance by him, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the mix again next year. It's just probably his favorite course in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, you're going to have those courses which really just play to you, where you can just hit a zone, and I think that's the story for Fred Couples, as it is for Tiger Woods, as it is for Bubba Watson, as for a number of players over time, and Nick Faldo certainly no stranger to that. He had won back-to-back majors. A very brief comment about Fred Couples, Mike, and then let's talk a little bit about... No, actually, I think we'll skip the thing about Adam Scott. I think we've said enough about him. So, yeah, Fred Couples, how about his lasting potential? What'd you think?
Well, I don't think he can win anymore at this point. He did have a, like, realistic chance... probably from, like, when he turned 50 to, like, 53, I think he could have won the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Studying to lose the power a little bit. But, yeah, he just knows how to play the course, where to miss, and he's just in a good state of mind. So till he completely loses the distance, he'll probably be in the mix the first couple days like he usually is.
Did any of you guys play Fred Couples in the first two rounds on your fantasy team?
No, I decided not to at the last second, and that was a bad idea on my point.
John?
No, I didn't have him on my team. I had some poor choices this week. I think only four of my players made the cut, so I definitely lost some ground on everyone. So need to get it back here with these sheer events in the next couple weeks.
That's where you can really make your bread and butter, though, I mean, as far as fantasy golf. And, Mike, I do want to take this moment while we're on the air to thank you for setting this up. I mean, I never tried fantasy golf before. It's actually a lot of fun. It's kind of like doing a pick'em in a sense, but with golf players. And then you just select, okay, which golfers are going to do well this weekend? And you get a fresh slate just about every time. The only difference is that For specific players, you have a limit of how many times you can use them, a particular guy, for the season. So it's worked out really well so far. It's a lot of fun. Just major props to you for setting it up, and I hope you're enjoying it as much as the rest of us are.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of fun in the way that it's a little bit, it's not too intense. I mean, you can have great picks that, you know, make sense in logic, but, you know, golf is just a game where it's like, who knows what's going to happen each week. So, yeah, it's a pretty even playing field, and you just see what happens.
Very good, Mike. Last question for you tonight, and that is this. How far is your place of residence from Stamford, Connecticut? Would you know off the top of your head?
Stamford, Connecticut, hour maybe less.
Less than an hour, Mike. I formally invite you to join us on June 19th at our Stamford meetup at Bobby V's. If you can make the time, we certainly would be privileged to have you.
June 19th. I'll keep the date open.
Great. Thanks, John. I mentioned that to you as well. Hope you can make it out there to Stamford with hopefully the junk man and the yachtsman and myself, and it'll be a good time. So thanks again for your consideration, everybody.
Yeah, I think that's the week after the U.S. Open, if I'm not mistaken. So it would certainly be a lot to talk about if we were to go through with that scenario.
Yeah, absolutely. That really would be fun. It'd be interesting to meet in person for the first time. John and Mike, have you ever met each other in person out of curiosity?
No.
Wow.
No.
Gosh, you guys are like long time. You know, whenever you're on the air, it always seems like you guys have I always feel like you guys have known each other for many. I mean, you have, but it's interesting that you haven't seen each other in person. So we're hoping to change that. And as far as tonight,
yeah. Well,
oh, go ahead, John.
Yeah, we'll have to eventually. Yeah, I said we'll have to eventually get around to golf together at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to at some point, assuming my game is actually somewhat. God, it's been a mess. I'm actually going to go see a pro this year, but we'll see.
Well, I mean, I think even a less than stellar effort, I'm sure it's still pretty good, Mike. I'm positive you have a really good beat on the game of golf. Anyway, I mean, you're really good at analyzing swing, certainly. So. If this doesn't work out, at least I can sense you'd be a pretty good coach.
No, I don't know anywhere near enough about a golf swing to be a golf swing coach. Although I could just do what Sean Foley did and rip off two people and show people track more numbers. maybe I'll do that.
I like it. That's funny. Now, I guess I'm not done yet. John, I know that the shot... The video of Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and Gary Player teeing off at the Masters was played way too many times this weekend. But in light of that, did you get a chance to see that Golf Channel special on Arnold Palmer? I did not realize how big of an impact he had in golf. Because, you know, I'm still relatively new to the sport in terms of following it. But he really lit up a lot of eyeballs. I mean, he was apparently a really exciting player to watch. He really brought an energy and a flair to the game that no one could have expected before him. Did you see the special? And what do you think about? What is your interpretation of the King in perspective?
Yeah. I mean, first off, I always enjoy seeing that opening ceremony once, but you know, once you see it for the 10th time, I mean, come on. I think that's instead of porn, I think Nance gets off to that video. A little three teeing off the Masters. I mean, Arnold Palmer, I mean, what can you say? He opened the door for golf to be really popular in America, I think, before, just as Nicklaus was coming around, too, and it was just them, you know, battling back and forth that, really kind of set the foundation of the game. And I'll be honest, I didn't see the special, but I'll have to check it out at some point. But, the King, I mean, without him, I don't think we're, you know, talking about a tournament that had probably millions of viewers and all sorts of sponsorship money, and the winner got $1.6 million yesterday. It's not for Arnold Palmer and the like. That's never going to happen.
It's very true. I mean, I think what he was able to do in bringing television to the forefront and making the most out of that medium in his day, and we're talking about the early '60s, is truly remarkable. I never really realized that impact until I learned a little bit more about his history, and I think that's really cool. I mean, I'm glad he's around to tell the tale as well. I think that's really neat. Mike, did you get the chance to see that special on Golf Channel, the Arnold Palmer special, or no?
Actually, and it's a free night special. That was only part one.
Wow.
Yeah, Arnold Palmer did more to popularize the game of golf, not just like the tour players, but the game itself in this country than anyone else. That's not even close. And I wish I had the book with me, but it gives you like the numbers from when Palmer won the 1960 U.S. Open, and it was shown on TV how just the game just absolutely exploded. And then he became like the first, you know, I don't know, celebrity type golfer with all the endorsements and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, his impact just on golf in general and then the touring pros and, you know, everyone owes Arnold Palmer, everyone making a living playing golf, and a lot of us who play golf owe a lot to Arnold Palmer because he really set it on and made it what it is today.
Yeah, I owe a lot of gratitude to him, and not only all that, but he invented a beverage. I mean, the Arnold Palmer, he's the name of a drink now. I mean, it's really indelible, the impact he's had on golf and on society here in America. I think it's tremendous. So, John, final thoughts about the Masters or any other aspects of golf? This is also a good opportunity for any open forum topics if you wanted to bring that up. So anything left you wanted to say?
No, I mean, it was I think my opening comments pretty much described it. It was an unusual final round where no one really made a charge, but Bubba played the best golf and deserved to win. So, and that's it. He gets his second green jacket, and we'll look forward to some big events coming up within the next month. We've got the Players next month, and then before you know it, the U.S. Open will be here. So, it's an exciting time for golf, and, enjoy these cheering tournaments, kind of catch the final rounds of them, and just get ready for more big ones coming up in the next couple of months. So I guess that's about it.
Well, it's certainly the beginning of yet another fun and interesting golf season. And we are just getting started, certainly, with the PGA Tour. It should be a lot of fun. So Mike, any final thoughts from your end?
Yeah, just real quick. You know, if you saw some of the scores of tournaments earlier this year, a lot of them were less than 10 under par, like 9 under par, 8 under par, and like relatively minor tournaments, like the Texas Open, it was single digits under par, and the Farmers Insurance Open was single digits under par, and this was all happening because it just seemed to be windy every week. And I kind of figured that because these scores were pretty high, that the Masters, they were going to make sure Augusta was pretty tough this year because they didn't want to see like 15 or 16 under with the Texas Open having 8 under as their score. And, maybe I don't know if you can blame that entirely for the tournament not being as having a thrilling finish. But hopefully some good will come out of it because I think it does kind of prove that, you know, all the trees that they've planted there, which are kind of excessive, they can get rid of some of them, and the course will still be, you know, a great challenge, and it'll be a little more strategic too, so they can kind of get back to what the course was like before Fazio, screwed up a couple holes. But we can get into that another time.
Yep, and we came very close to having the youngest person to win a major, Masters in Masters tournament history in Jordan Spieth. We also came close to seeing such a wunderkind win his first-timer win a Masters since Fuzzy Zeller did 1979, but it was not meant to be, but nonetheless a good time. Guys, once again, a really tremendous job out of you both. I really want to thank you both for being here tonight, and I look forward to our future podcast down the road. We'll have much to cover. So for now, have a great rest of your week. And Mike, I'll see you in a couple days for the NHL podcast, but till then, thanks a lot, everybody.
Take care.
All right, buddy.
All right, Dave. Thanks.
You got it. All right. Take care, guys. That's it for our show. That's a wrap. So it's been a lot of fun. Mike in North Jersey, John in Connecticut. It was really great. Hope that you all enjoyed it. Enjoy your evening. We'll be back on Wednesday night to do the NHL Stanley Cup preview with the aforementioned Mike in North Jersey. Robert in Virginia, and others. Stay tuned for that in a couple days. But until then, we'll see you next time.